The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul. My guest is Stuart Dawn. He is Chief Operating Officer at the PropTech Connection. How much talking have we done about PropTech this year? It's been, well, last several years. It's been amazing. He is based in Sydney, but he hails from Scotland. Spent 4 years in Japan. This man understands the business. He understands culture. So we're really glad to have him. Now, one of the things Stuart recently did, which prompted this podcast, is that he wrote an article that ran in at least a couple of our magazines called The AI Future, How Artificial Intelligence is Poised to Reshape the Commercial Real Estate Industry. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for having me.
You know, your article, a very interesting article, and you make lots of references in there to what is possible. Obviously, AI has garnered a lot of attention this past year. But let me start by asking you, how intelligent is AI? I mean, we measure intelligence by IQ or intelligence quotient. What is the IQ of the current AI models, and what will it be in the short term and the longer term? Is it How smart is it now, and how smart is it going to get?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I was actually recently at a talk by the former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair, who was talking about AI in general, and I think he summarized it very well. The current level of AI is an IQ of around 50.
But it's 50, 50.
Yes,
but it's which is kind of a dumb. That's a fairly dumb human being. I mean that's a handicapped human being.
Yeah, it is, but it's obviously got access to a huge amount of data. And I think where we're getting to, there's a view that in the next sort of 18 to 24 months, AI will get to a point where it's an IQ around 150, which is obviously a far more intelligent human being. That then it becomes very powerful. And then if you start to take that forward on the sort of curves that you're seeing, that could be an IQ of 200 in 5 years' time. That becomes really, really compelling, making not just insights, but real decisions and actually evolving human consciousness. So I think it's a really fascinating space. I do think AI is a bit of a buzzword, and I think a lot of people don't understand it and how it applies to their business. And what we tried to do in the article is give some real-life examples of what it means for the property industry, but also start to hypothesize what that could look like in 5, 10, 15 years' time, just based on some of the trends we're seeing.
So a 200 IQ in 5 years of the projection is correct. That's genius level IQ, and it's only going to go up from there, I'm sure. These things don't really have any limitations. Now, of course, the fear is, especially as these AI models have more and more facility and higher IQ, is that it's going to replace human jobs. What are the current projections in terms of the number of jobs AI could replace or disrupt? And draw the distinction there, Stuart. There's replacement is obviously, it's taken my job. I don't have a job anymore, or I have to get a different job. And then what about disruption? How would you characterize a disrupted job?
Yeah, Mike, I think it's quite interesting. I don't want to be sort of spread fear. I think there's a view, and there's some very scary stats around that, 30 to 40% of people could lose their job. Over 75% of office workers will have their jobs impacted in some way. I think for me, and again, the greater and better minds in this space than ourselves, but I think that what human nature has always done is it's evolved and adapted. You could take it back 150 years ago and the implementation of factory processing and factory lines and the view that humans were never going to work again. We evolved, we moved into more highly skilled work, and I can see that happening here. At the moment, AI is taking some of the sort of more manual data jobs that people were doing before, and they're using that time to be more productive. So I think it's something we're working with and wrestling with as a society, and My space here is primarily in the property industry, but it's one that affects all facets of society.
You know, I was talking to somebody in the investment business, and he said, really, what you were saying in that it is replacing some jobs, but they're the repetitive jobs that are mind-numbing for human beings, and they're the kind of jobs that you had trouble retaining employees anyway because they just went stark raving mad doing the same stuff over and over, and they wanted to do something different. With AI, you don't have that problem of boredom or of having to replace it. So we talked replacement, we talked disruption, but what about enhancement? Because I'm assuming that virtually every white collar job out there and a lot of blue collar jobs are going to be enhanced by AI.
Yeah, I'd say, and that was some of the genesis of the article we talked about. I was using some of the examples in the property industry in particular of areas where jobs will become more interesting. There's some of the levels of data and insight that you're going to get using AI becomes quite powerful, and people will be making more insightful judgments. They'll be making better decisions, but they'll be doing it on a better, fuller understanding of their business and the impact. So I think it's actually quite, for somebody like myself that's in a managerial role, you feel you're making better decisions. You're less blind. And I think it becomes a lot more compelling.
You know, we use AI at the at our organization. It doesn't write articles for us, but it helps us with the headline generation, pros and cons of different situations. And so it can do a lot of different things, although, you have to be very careful with. Are you already using it within your organization?
Yeah, we're primarily an advisory business for the prop techs, the real estate, or the investment world. And there's elements of what we do in terms of data capture, tagging, and in terms of research, which are quite manual, and AI is helping us with that. It does mean that our analysts are effectively moving up the value chain and spending more time doing deeper and more technical analysis. So, I think it's quite powerful, and that's a small business like ourselves. And with a global footprint, but if you're a leading investment manager or an advisory business that's got 10,000 employees, you can see how it really makes a difference to the delivery.
Now, you say yourself that the property sector has a historic aversion to adoption of technology. It's been slow to come to technology, at least in the past. I get the sense that you don't believe that that is the case anymore, especially with AI. True?
Yes and no. I think the property industry is still a little bit risk averse. I think it's by its very nature, it's a more traditional industry, more conservative. I think there are examples of firms that are embracing this, and globally, I think there's a huge interest in AI. I think it's taken a while for property, and not just all property, I think there's differences within the sectors. So I would say leisure and retail have always been more advanced. They've had to be because they're based on end consumers and behaviours. And where I think commercial property, offices, some of the mixed use stuff have been a little bit slower to adapt. But I think hopefully you saw in the article and got some examples we can share in the call of how they're coming around to this now and how they can see the benefits as well.
Yeah, let's go right to that. You suggest that AI has numerous roles to play with regard to property investing and operating. Give us some examples.
Yeah, there's loads. I mean, I think a couple of the ones, I'll start with one of the more simple ones in terms of valuation. I think historically most people have wanted to know, and there's a curiosity. We all want to know what our house is valued at. We want to know when we're buying upsizing or downsizing or a holiday home. And I think historically that's been sort of data-led, and companies like Zillow in the US, Rightmove in the UK, CoreLogic in Australia have rich data sets. What we're now seeing is AI is effectively enhancing that data set, making it more accurate. So they're adding various data fields, some positive, some negative. They're doing scenario planning. And it's less relevant for some of the more developed markets, so the US, the UK, or Europe. But where it becomes really fascinating is when you're doing something without comparables. So if you're doing a completely new development, so we're doing a lot of work in the Middle East at the moment, and you're probably aware of some of the buildings that are going on there, like NEOM, etc. You're effectively building a new city from scratch. You don't have the data to compare what prices they should sell them. And everyone needs to get comfort in that pricing, whether that's the lenders, whether that's the construction companies or the consumers that are going to buy these properties. So what you're seeing here is effectively AI helping to build validation and build an understanding of what these properties are worth. I think that's really quite compelling. And I think it becomes very powerful. And you need that for risk management as well. I think following
No.
on through, yeah, on you go, Max, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the other ones that you mentioned was building management systems, and I've long thought that, and this is probably now growth of my having watched 2001: A Space Odyssey several times, a HAL-like operating system within the building that automates the building that where you walk in the building in the morning with a fob in your pocket, and it says, "Good morning, Dave," and it. Does a host of different things. It knows when you arrive, it knows when you leave, it knows your preferences and so on. Now that is not a tomorrow sort of thing, I'm sure. But how advanced do you think building management systems can get in, say, the next 10 years? Do you have any sense of what AI could do in terms of optimizing building management systems?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. I think there's a kind of where we are now, and then there's where we're going to be in 5, 10 years' time. And so I think maybe talk about some of the examples we're seeing now. And it is hard because I think the life cycle in property is very different. So IT runs on kind of 3 to 5 year time horizon. Construction of a new office development, and I'm actually stood right next to one of the leading ones in Sydney, the Salesforce Tower. Which was put up about a year ago and is, you know, a fantastic example of a cutting-edge building. But that takes us 6, 7 years of your planning and build. And then you put 10-year leases on top of that, and the life cycle of a building, 100 years, give or take, depending on the quality of the build. So you've got a challenge for retrofitting. But brand new buildings, you are seeing some really compelling technology. And what I'd like to say is that those landlords and the building managers really understood it best. So they're moving away from sort of engaging with the tenant to understanding all the people under that. So the individuals that come into the building, as you say, they know your preferences, they know when you're coming in. And we're seeing examples of that. And it's quite fascinating. I think the other thing where you're seeing in the here and now is building management systems doing some of the less glamorous stuff, but actually really, really important things. So I was chatting to the head of IT for Woolworths recently. Woolworths is a large supermarket chain in Australia. They generate just over 1% of all energy in Australia. So it shows you how much scale they've got. They've got 75,000 devices. They're capturing 1.7 million data points. And what they've done is effectively worked with the existing data capture, integrated AI, some insights. And what they're now doing is kind of predictive maintenance. So if you can imagine, of that 75,000 devices, I think 16,000 of them are fridges. If a fridge or a freezer goes down, there's a opportunity cost loss there for Woolworths. There's times, you know, food that goes off. There's stuff that they can't sell. There's a, you know, annoyance for customers as they come in to do their weekly shop. What they're now doing is using some of the data and effectively predicting which fridge or freezer is going to fall over. And they've now got a fantastic track record of identifying those that are likely to sort of fail within the next 5 days. And they've saved over $10 million in year to date to looking at that effect. So that's a really powerful use of technology. It's not the most exciting, but it does show you how it can have real value as well.
Yeah, those are real dollars there. Now you write that some property types are expected to become less sought after, while others will benefit from increased demand. Explain that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. So there's the obvious ones that people can see. So, you know, the use of data centers, as people are churning through AI and data in general, data centers, something we probably hadn't really considered as a sector or an asset class 10 years ago, is now a massive area. We're seeing year-on-year growth of 10%. And at the moment, those all have to be pretty close to urban centers. So that's, you know, it's an interesting space, use of space. You know, we're seeing some interesting examples. I was in Japan recently, and they're doing underwater data centers because one of the major impacts of these data centers is cooling to try and keep them cool. So effectively putting them underwater as a proof of concept to see if that works. So that's one area, that's an obvious one. I guess what we're also seeing is change in use of buildings. And it's not just AI driven. This is partly driven by, I hate to use the C word, the COVID word, and we could call it the great work experiment, whatever you want to call it. It effectively has really changed how offices and buildings are used. So what we're seeing now is, you know, historically a prime building would have maybe 5% of space given over to kind of common areas or flexible space. That number now is for new buildings is around 40%. And really the only way you can get that level of flexibility in a new office environment is to engage with the data you've got and AI as well. So I think understanding that and building that degree of flexibility into your building to allow multiple use cases is quite powerful. So again, I'm not going to sit here and confidently say in 15 years time, we will need less office space, but I think there is a very high probability that we'll be using space differently. So I think understanding that when you build, use your building, configure it, and having that adaptability to make data-led insights, I think is quite powerful.
And it makes sense. Now, you also predict, though, that people, at least some people, will have more free time. How will that happen? Because it always seems like the work expands to gobble up every bit of time, and we take these devices home with us, these phones, laptops, and so on. And it seems like the workday never really ends. A lot of people can't really say when the workday starts, when it ends, or how many hours a week they're really putting in. How are people going to end up with more free time?
Look, we've been talking about the concept of a four-day week for over 100 years and giving people more leisure time. What you're seeing here with the growth of AI is a change in what people are doing. It's going to be less, as you say, you said earlier on, some of the manual data crunching is going to be more value-add activity. And that does mean that you'll need less, you know, less necessarily less face-to-face time. It may mean that people have more portfolio careers, but also already seeing and increase the number of people developing side hustles or different roles. I think it's a challenge. And I think what will happen is what we are seeing is people are pushing back a little bit as a society. I'm in Australia at the moment. There's a bill just been passed recently about the right to disconnect from work. Similar legislation has been passed in European countries. I used to work for a French bank, and they were not allowed to email you over the weekend. So we are seeing a switch to work-life balance. And ultimately, we think it will change how, you know, the working week looks. I think the traditional 9-to-5 has failed for a lot of reasons. And I think COVID has shone a light on that. What it means longer term, I can't be entirely precise, but I think it will be a little bit more varied and a little bit more flexible.
Okay, so artificial intelligence, it's expected to create a real boost in productivity. So it stands to reason that perhaps people could work a four-day week, be just as productive. Research has shown, check me on this, but the research I've looked at has shown that people who work, who have three-day weekends are happier and perhaps healthier because they've got that mental decompression time. So assuming this comes to pass, I don't even know if this is an answerable question, Stuart. You tell me, what will people do with that free time? What do human psychographics tell you that people will do with that time? Because I think you do put a piece of speculation in the article about what people might do.
I guess it's what do people do with the free time at the moment? They spend time with friends and family. They look at leisure. So we do see leisure as a attractive area. And this is an area that's expanded. People have tended to value experiences rather than consumer goods in recent years. And we think that's something that will continue. So, you know, I mentioned in the article the Sphere in Las Vegas as an example of, but it's one of many. We're chatting to a company in one of the Asian markets that's looking at the moment at creating an entertainment space that's very led by AI and driven by, you know, the end behavior and consumer journey. So what they're also talking about doing is integrating haptics devices, which is another fantastic technology, you know, more used in gaming at the moment, but moving that into kind of entertainment space. So I think there'll be a growth in leisure, there'll be a growth in sort of mixed use. And we'd like to, I think hopefully that will mean some interesting technology and some interesting developments. I think the challenge will be for our city centres. At the moment, they're predominantly office-led, so we will have to be a little bit more flexible about what we do with that space and how we retrofit it, for example.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Sphere in Las Vegas, and there's other facilities that are out there that are really augmented reality, or maybe even virtual reality eventually, which is really interesting. I remember a guy I had on the podcast years ago who's in the architecture and design business, building esports spaces and things of that nature, saying, you know, the future of AI or AR is not wearing goggles. It's being in an environment where with other people, where you've got this sort of augmented or virtual type reality. And that's what it sounds like the Sphere in Vegas has done in others. So really interesting stuff. And, you know, Stuart, you mentioned data centers earlier, and running AI, chatbots and LLMs, large language models and so on, takes an enormous amount of data. What does this mean for the for data center demand?
Well, yeah, we mentioned we forecast, and we're not the only ones with forecasts that data center demand continued to increase. There will be obviously technological improvements. We see capture being greater. We'll also see there's a lot of redundant data as well, and I think people will start to be a little bit more tailored in what they look at. You know, if you go 10, 15 years ago, there was this concept of data lakes was the big thing everyone was talking about in my previous organization. We had a data lake, and I think analysis was a question to somebody from Hitachi recently, the Japanese electronics company, and they were saying they use 4% of their data when they're looking at making decisions. Which is actually quite depressing in a way that there's all this data being captured and never looked at. And I suppose that's the element of what AI will do as well, is actually see whether any of that data has value. And if it doesn't, there'll be decisions made, because data storage in itself is actually a cost.
Yeah, yeah. So just in wrapping up, Stuart, why don't you summarize for us where you see AI going with the real estate industry? What do you see as the most salient impacts it will have on the real estate investment and occupation and operation business?
So I think what you'll see is a couple of areas. I think you'll see real, probably better decision making. I think a lot of decision making in property has been made kind of on two or three key metrics. So simple things like, oh, grade A commercial property is valued at X per square meter. It's a known figure. What you're actually seeing now is, because we've got richer data, AI over the top, people are looking at that and being a little bit more streetwise. So they're going, actually, it's not as homogenous as we once thought. In a kind of old investment path, which I worked in many years ago, instead of going top down, you go bottom up. It would be kind of stock selection. So you'll be looking at the individual characteristics and then modeling that on each property. So that's quite interesting. And I think we'll get better, more accurate valuations, and people have a better view of what's going on. The other area I think that we mentioned in the article, I think is important, is the flexibility of space. I mentioned earlier on, I think there will be less fixed office space. I think what you will need is the use of data and AI to help you adapt your space organically over time. So whether that's, you know, whether it's mixed use, whether it's more leisure, you're also seeing engagements. And we talk a lot of time, we talk about ESG, we talk about the environmental aspect. What I'm seeing a lot is the social aspect now, people engaging with the community, understanding they've got empty space. So giving it over to local universities or art events or galleries as a way of engaging with the community. It helps the engagement, but also it's understanding the space is there and people can use it more flexibly. So that's two of the areas. I think there will be other areas we can't foresee at the moment, but I would consider AI will be helpful for some other areas in construction, for example. We look at modern methods of construction. 3D printing is an area which has struggled to get scale globally. AI helps because if 3D printing can adapt as we go along, whether that's using BIM systems and understanding what's going on during a build. And I think that will be the last aspect where you see use of AI and data modeling as part of a construction life cycle. At the moment, construction is a very, very risky business. There's lots of cost overruns, there's lots of defects, there's lots of workarounds. A project plan that you write 5 years ago will be out of date almost the day it starts. So I think it's understanding where the data modeling can help there, reduce risk, and increase returns. And that will help everyone, as I think most areas do need to see investment in construction globally.
Our guest has been Stuart Dawn. He is Chief Operating Officer at the PropTech Connection. He joined us from Sydney, Australia. Stuart, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mike. Really, really enjoyed it. Thanks.